This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
And hello, Hearts of Oak. I'm delighted to have Drew Allen with me today, and I've been thoroughly engrossed in his book, America's Last Stand, over the last week. But Drew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Peter, I've been looking forward to this, so thanks for having me.
Not at all. It's a great book, and let me just bring it up on the screen. That's what people can find, America's Last Stand, Will You Vote to Save or Destroy America in 2024? And it's a huge question, which not only has repercussions for you over in the US, but has repercussions for us, I think, here where I am in the UK and across Europe. It is a global election, I think, the likes we have not seen before. But we'll get into all of that. But Drew, for maybe our UK audience, we're probably 55% UK, 45% US, and you're obviously a conservative author, columnist, and host of the Drew Allen Show podcast. But maybe you can introduce yourself to those of our audience who haven't come across you before we delve into the book.
Well, sure. I'm a guy that should be a far left liberal Democrat based on my resume. And that's the truth. I mean, I was educated in Dallas, Texas at an elitist all-male college preparatory school, high school. That was far left. The Jesuits are notoriously left-leaning. And that was the case at school. All my friends were Democrats. Every single one of them were liberal Democrats. I went to Pepperdine for college, but I was a theater major. So Pepperdine is typically, associated with a more conservative leaning, if that even exists in the academia anymore. It's still going left as well. But I was a theater major. So in the theater world, the acting world, again, I was the lone conservative, effectively. And then I moved to New York City as an actor. And it's a crazy story for another time. I'll write a book about it maybe. But I ended up getting a job working for Marc Jacobs in fashion. And I moved to Milan, Italy. I speak Italian. And I opened the first retail store in Milan. I stayed there 2.5 years, ended up moving back to LA eventually, and continued acting, ended up producing a movie, worked for Marc Jacobs, managing some other stores in West Hollywood. And, I got tired of Hollywood and, fast forward kind of to 2020 and all of that. I lost all my liberal Democrat friends over politics. Not my choice, their choice. People that were in my wedding, Peter, my best man in my wedding, doesn't talk to me anymore because of 2020, despite me. I wasn't a closeted conservative. That's the thing, too. It wasn't like I was going hiding in Hollywood and everywhere else. I mean, everyone knew what I thought, but it used to be that you could actually live together. And that's what's so scary. And we can get into it about what's happening today globally in the world, this true intolerance. And I ended up getting involved in politics after 2020. I became I had a publicist, and then I ended up becoming a publicist. So, I do publicity for a lot of people, Tulsi Gabbard and Carrie Lake and Dr. Ben Carson. And I mean, there's a whole lot of people that I do publicity for. And then also, because I didn't start out as a publicist, I still write. I have my book. I have a podcast. And I do interviews like this as well. And I'm deeply concerned about this country. And I never swayed. That's the thing. I've always lived my life in the lion's den. That's why I went through the resume, not to bore everyone, but to help you understand that I've been around these people my whole life. And I was not persuaded to join them. I actually was forced and fired to some extent. So my point is, everything I write about, everything I talk about, everything I do, all my positions, they're not just because somebody told me. They're not because I watched some TV host that's conservative tell me to do it. It's because I have been challenged my entire life on those positions and my ideas, and I have never been convinced otherwise.
100%. I mean, the normal viewpoint has to be conservative on our culture and all the things that make it good and great. And we at Pete Peterson from Pepperdine, I went over to see him 2 years ago and had him on the show, and love what he is doing over in Pepperdine. But yeah, that's a whole other conversation. But There are lots of things. Let me pull out some of the things on the book. And obviously, the book is available everywhere. The links are in the description, whether the viewers are watching on any of the platforms or listening on Podbean or the podcasting apps. Everything is available there. But you start off on just the introduction, saying that the 2024 presidential election is the most consequential election in our lifetime. Democrats have already framed the likely rematch between former President Donald Trump and incumbent President Joe Biden, or as I like to call him, the former VP Joe Biden, as Stephen Crowder comment, but as an election that will determine whether or not American democracy lives or dies. And that's a broad stroke, but I think you're buying on the money that this is one of the most key elections, certainly that I've ever witnessed in my lifetime. And I've loved politics and always loved US politics, but this is the most consequential election. You're buying on the money.
Yeah, look, I mean, one of the reasons that I felt compelled to write this book is because I understand human nature and reality. And that is that it's very hard for mankind, human beings, when they're living in the present, before it becomes history and right past hindsight becomes 2020, it's very difficult to actually confront and understand from, you know, a space view looking down at the earth, what exactly is happening, how serious it is. That's what's so remarkable, by the way, about 1776, for example, and the founding fathers. They actually did understand what was at stake. And they made a decision. And this is why I say, you know, what we're up against today is akin to 1776. Now, we're trying to resolve this problem with our democratic process, if you will. We're a constitutional republic. We are trying to vote to take back our destiny. And what's so dangerous, of course, is Democrats and rhinos, too. You know, the deep state, the uniparty, it's all the same. People who represent the government and not the people. These individuals are trying to take away that peaceful means of taking back our destiny by prosecuting Trump and so on and so forth. So that's what's so outrageous. But, you know, 1776, you know, you had Thomas Paine, who wrote Uncommon Sense. And that was so consequential because, you know, you have to understand that back then, all the colonists, the early Americans understood was, I mean, they were British subjects. They were loyal to the crown. They were British. I mean, that's the reality. And so for those people to make a decision that they were going to actually overturn that, fight against that, and create a new nation was really big. And so that's what's wild. People have to understand about what people did back then. And it wasn't everybody, but it was enough people, obviously, to get that movement going. And so we need to understand that today because, look, we have way more distractions today. So we have, you know, Netflix. We have this fake economy where we're living on borrowed time and with printing trillions of dollars and so on and so all this nonsense. We have immense propaganda that no one ever could have understood or fathomed in the past to try and convince you that what you experience with your own eyes and reality is not true. Perception becomes reality. So we have all these things we're up against. You could just go and turn on Netflix because it makes you feel better than having a conversation like this and discussing your responsibility in saving a culture, saving society, and actually being truly progressive and maintaining those ideals that, you know, were revolutionary in America, which, of course, is that we the people are master and those in government are servant. And this is what we're up against globally, Peter. It's not just the United States, although we are still the leader because we're such a massively important country. We have so much power. That's just the reality. So it does influence everyone else. But everyone in the, if you look at Great Britain, if you look at what's happening in London, if you look, just look across the Western world and you have a government, wherever you are, politicians that believe that rights are not unalienable. They believe that your rights come from them. They believe that they are the master and you are a servant. And that is backwards. And so this is what we're fighting against. Are we going to say that we, the people, the citizen, you know, can make decisions for our own lives? Do we have freedom? Do we have self-determination? Or are we just going to vote and support slavery for mankind again? Because that's the quintessential, what this boils down to in its essence.
Well, I want to go through, I mean, chapter one, the real threat to democracy, and goes through the attacks on Trump. Not only from Biden, but the deep state by and large. But chapter two, you talk about, are you better off under Biden presidency than you were under the Trump presidency? And you give the quote from Reagan back in 80, where he looked into the camera in that one debate with Jimmy Carter and asked, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And of course, the answer is no. Now, I am amazed, obviously, not there across the pond over here in London, but I wonder how on earth has anyone decided to vote for Biden? You look at the polling and Trump ahead in the vast majority of polling, but my question is, how is anyone still deciding to put a X beside Biden?
Yeah, I mean, it's borderline insanity. Anyone who would do that, I mean, you're voting against your own self-interest. Sure. By doing that, you're voting against your children's self-interest, your own self-interest, your country's self-interest. I mean, that is a vote. It's a cult vote. And as much as the left likes to project in this country and around the world, too, and try and say that, you know, MAGA and Trump's a cult, that couldn't be further from the truth. They need to look in the mirror, because a cult is defined by, for example, somebody who would radically change their position simply because the party itself changes. So this is what, and this is the Democrat Party in America throughout its history. So, you know, one moment they say, for example, the abortion issue that they hope they can make this election about, but, you know, they'll take the abortion issue and on one day, safe, legal, and rare. That's the mantra by Hillary Clinton and everyone else. And today, the party unilaterally, all supports effectively infanticide. And the Democrat voter, not the politician, simply adopts that new position as its own. So obviously, even 10 years ago, the Democrat voter could agree and understand that there were two genders, two sexes, male and female. You know, you would have been like screaming, you know, from the rooftops if you were to suggest a decade ago that it was appropriate for little Johnny, your 10-year-old boy, to chop off his pee-pee without your permission. Yeah. And today, the Democrat Party supports that, and the Democrat voter simply either supports it or just pretends like it's not an issue.
That's interesting that we are having that debate in the UK and in many European countries, and we had Billboard Chris on recently. Sadly, the US are still not having that conversation, but I hope and pray that you follow, because that sexual abuse of children has to be key. But I mean, chapter four, you title Fascists and Semi-Fascists, and you talk about, obviously, under Trump, there was peace, that he didn't start any war, and that's something our commentators seemingly want to forget. But this whole thing on Trump supporters, and you in the book, you talk about Biden claimed that Donald Trump and MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our public. I don't think we've ever seen that before, where a whole group of society have been called extremists, fascists. This is quite new language. And of course, the deplorables, I'm an honor to be an adopted deplorable, maybe from over here. But it's that hatred of a section of society. And I don't think we've ever seen that before.
No, that's never had any place in the United States of America, certainly. I mean, this is a big turning point in our history for a president of the United States. I mean, he's a puppet, but, you know, whatever, Joe Biden, the diaper man himself. Well, this of course is something that is unprecedented. And this is, you know, the Democrats love to get ahead. The Democrats use this tactic of basically just going and accusing Republicans and MAGA of what they're guilty of, so that when MAGA turns around and points out the reality that they are that, they've already come out of the gate. It's kind of like putting themselves in bubble wrap. But, you know, that's something that Hitler would say about Jews, for example. That is genocidal talk, by the way. It's always the precursor. You can look in African countries and elsewhere, us versus them, right? I mean, this is the precursor to a genocide. You dehumanize the other side. And that's they know what they're doing by doing that. And, you know, I mean, we saw this in 2022. What's so scary is that you have Democrat supporters. They are people who have been succumbed to the poison of tyranny. They themselves have a tyrannical mindset themselves. And they, you know, with the worldwide lockdowns and COVID and all of that, every country saw this. there was a group of people that turned vicious towards the people that turned out to be right. Like myself, like the writers of the Great Barrington Declaration, for example, these brilliant individuals who pointed out what science had already backed in the past, that masks, for example, didn't work, that social distancing was more harmful than it was good, and that you should have a targeted approach. Well, we were obviously canceled. Those were the days where you're getting booted off of Twitter back then and everything else. And, you know, you had people in this country that would wish harm upon you if you disagreed with the talking point dictated from the far left that wanted to use lockdowns to seize liberty. And they would happily see you hauled off to prison over that. J6, that's another perfect example. The vast majority of those people who had been prosecuted, who were sitting in jails even, they weren't violent protesters. Yeah. And in fact, we know that many were invited into the Capitol building through open doors, and their crime was selfies, misdemeanor offenses, and they've had their rights suspended unconstitutionally in this country. And the Democrats support that. So here's what I say, Peter. I actually, everyone listening, maybe you'll feel this way too. I am far less afraid of the tyrants in government than I am the tyrants that are my neighbors. Mm-hmm. Because the government itself is a small minority of a population. They understand this. You know, even the Nazis going back to Germany, if they didn't have the complicity of German citizens, they never could have gotten away with what they did, for example. So I'm very fearful of my neighbors. If the FBI were to show up at my house because I did this interview with you, Peter, which is not, it's becoming less and less absurd. Mm-hmm. Certainly if Biden and Democrats win in 2024, my neighbors would actually be cheering, because I live in California, cheering as I was hauled off to jail for committing the crime of speaking freely.
Mm-hmm. No, we're seeing that more, and we've seen exactly the same people willing, certainly during COVID, willing to report neighbors to the police, but we haven't gone down the full rabbit hole as you have of seeing that political change. Can I, on chapter five, the myth of the big switch, and I find that intriguing, a couple of lines from the chapter: slavery, Jim Crow, and discrimination were all championed by the left, by the Democrat Party. But perhaps no lie is more egregious or offensive, insulting to basic intelligence than that of the big switch. According to Democratic myth, in 1964, the Democrat Party miraculously became the party of civil rights and blacks in America, while the Republican Party suddenly became the party of anti-black racism in America. I think we have actually seen the same turn, the same twist, the same lie here in the UK, where we see the Conservative Party, so-called Conservative Party, conservative in name only, who actually stand for basic values that the majority of those from a black or an Asian community actually will stand for, because they are traditionally conservative. And yet it's Labour who, on the left, who seem to have vacuumed up those votes. But tell us more about that, the Democrat Party rebranding to being the party of actually the migrant party, or the Margaret, the party of the black. And that's the opposite of history.
Yeah, look, it's the greatest, most successful marketing campaign, PR campaign in world history. I say this as somebody who's, you know, from involved in the PR world. I mean, it's amazing that it took root. You know, to make an analogy first, it'd be like if the Nazi party, you know, say they weren't forced to disband after World War II. It would be like after they killed 6 million Jews in the Holocaust, they were allowed to survive. And in the subsequent elections, they claimed that, you know, they nominated, for example, some Jewish person to lead the Nazi party. And they said, look, we are the de facto supporters of Jews, and all of our rivals and opponents are anti-Semitic. You would laugh. I mean, it would be absurd. That is exactly what happened in the United States of America. The Democrat Party, it's not just that they were racist, it's that they still are racist. Okay? It's that it's not that their policies were racist, it's that they're veiled in anti-racism, but actually they are the greatest obstacle that Black Americans and minorities, for example, in the United States still face. So the entire history of America, right? The Republican Party was born. And look, I'm not defending the Republican Party, by the way, because we got, you know, mushy losers in the Republican Party. But I'm just talking about what the Republican Party historically stands for. They're not the racist party. Many of them are part of the Uniparty, but that's a different conversation. But Republicans tried to pass civil rights legislation for decade after decade after decade, and they were opposed by Democrats. The same Democrats, in fact, that would later claim to be the you know, proponents of anti-racism and friends of Blacks in America. What happened was 1964, basically, let me do it this way. Very short history lesson I think is important. Democrats depend upon the Black vote in the United States of America. They hitched their wagon to the Black vote, not just the Black vote, but like getting all of it. It's crazy. So back, you have to go back to Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover got a majority of the Black vote, and the Great Depression happened under Herbert Hoover. It wasn't Herbert Hoover's fault, but the Great Depression happened, and obviously he got blamed. Franklin Delano Roosevelt won the election against Herbert Hoover when Herbert Hoover ran for re-election. And since that moment, Democrats have gone after the Black vote and fought to keep the Black vote because they decided early on that because Blacks were concentrated in these city centers, if they could get the majority of Blacks to vote for them, they could win elections. And they knew back then, before you had unlimited illegal immigration, everything else, that as long as they controlled the Black vote, I mean, that was a key to that. If they lost the Black vote, they couldn't win. So you go to 1964, they've opposed civil rights legislation, even though they're promising to be friends of Blacks. And you had LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, Lyndon Baines Johnson, right, who became president because Kennedy was assassinated. Well, he signed into law the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which was actually Kennedy's bill. Now, they had a supermajority in Congress, which means they did not need a single Republican vote to pass any piece of legislation. But they couldn't pass it because Democrats in the South would not support the legislation. So Republicans actually were responsible for getting that legislation passed. And LBJ knew then that he was only doing that to virtue signal to Blacks to keep that vote intact. Because at this moment in history, Blacks were starting to flee the Democrat Party. So they had to do something and act. And so they replaced Jim Crow laws with welfare. And welfare is slavery, not just for Black Americans, but for any American, any person in mankind's history. Because the intention of welfare from politicians isn't actually to help you. It's to inhibit you. It's to enslave you. It doesn't help you escape poverty. It prevents you from escaping poverty. And this is what the Democrats have done. So it's all a sham. Everything Democrats do is about political power and control. That's it. It's all a big fraud operation. And Democrats, and that's why I write this chapter, because Blacks are fleeing the Democrat Party right now, and it's a threat to them. And I want Blacks to know, and I want other Americans to know, and I want everyone in the world to know what the Democrats are guilty of and what they've done and how absurd it is for them to claim that they're the friend of anybody. They're only the friend of themselves in politics.
100%. We've had Brand Strack on talking about the walkaway movement, and it's exciting to see that happen as people realize the shallowness and of the Democrat position. But there are two other chapters that kind of pigeonhole each other or bookmark each other, and that's Chapter 6, Black Votes Matter, and Chapter 8, the Democratic Party's Racism Industrial Complex. And it's similar here in the UK that it seems though there is an agenda to actually stir up racial tensions. And it seems though these parties are looking for color in everything. And by that, they are then stirring up a certain agenda, a certain narrative, and actually doing votes on that. We have elections today as we record this in the UK. And this race bidding seems to be a massive part of politics on the left.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have politicians, whether it's Sadiq Khan in London or it's Democrats here in the United States of America, and they can't run on their record because their record, sure, by design, creates misery. And so what they need to do, it's divide and conquer. Communists did this. Marxists do this. You know, proletariat, bourgeoisie, all that sort of. I mean, it's the same thing here, just different names. And so what's happening in America, of course, is they are creating as many victim classes as they can. And then they present themselves as the unique saviors. So you guys are all victims, and you know, you can't escape your victimhood unless you vote for Democrats. I am your champion. I am your savior. You need me. Vote for me. You know, they're creating rights where they don't exist. They're saying, you know, rights are being taken away when no rights are being taken away at all. So all of these things are intended to divide society up so they can come in and pick them off and play to the crowd. That's what's happening. That's why, you know, I mean, it gets a little bit more complex because money gets involved too. So for example, you know, the gender theory, for example, is a monstrosity, obviously, anti-scientific, creating confusion in children. And it's destroying society because you need strong men and strong women. And they're getting rid of that. They're coming in between parents and their children, and they're getting rid of tradition, values, and so on and so forth. And so it starts that way. But then with hormone therapy, just for example, just like the COVID vaccine stuff, it's an industry now. So you have an entire group of doctors out there that are monsters themselves, and they promote this because there's a lot of money to be made in hormone therapy, for example. So, you know, it kind of snowballs, if you will. But with critical race theory in particular, with race relations in America, in that chapter, it's important that I try to explain to people that just like Ford builds cars, the Democrat Party builds racism and racists. And so they tell children that aren't racist. I mean, no child is born racist. That's fundamentally false. That is instilled in them by men and women who have had their hearts corrupted over time in this world that we live in. And so to tell some child that you're a victim because of your skin color or your oppressor, if you're white, for example, I mean, it's morally reprehensible that you would do that, but that is what they were doing to children. And on top of that now, of course, as I mentioned, you've got gender theory as well to further create. And that's what academia does all the way from. That's why they want universal pre-K in America. It's not about helping kids and everything else. It's about getting control of your kids as early as possible. And these public schools, the universities, all they are, it's like going to a terrorist boot camp, you know, for Al-Qaeda, except here, you know, they're just creating new Democrat potential voters.
100%. And yeah, that you've a whole chapter on critical race theory and DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, which really has turned into didn't earn it. I think that's really more what that sums it up. I saw that. But chapter 7, you touched on the whole thing on welfare and slavery. I think that's very specific for me in the UK and the European context, and we have seen that. But you talk about, obviously, Lyndon Johnson starting modern-day slavery. And I guess encapsulating Americans and telling them, don't worry, we will look after you. You don't need to look after yourself. The government is here. And I think it was Reagan who said the worst words in the English language are, don't worry, the government is here to help, or something like that.
Yeah, he said the worst, I forget how many words, I'll pull a Joe Biden if I try and think of it now, but you'd have to count them off. The worst words or scariest words are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Yes, exactly. And we have that across Europe, but you're adopting that socialism that we have in Europe that means that you don't need to work because we will actually look after you. We will bring in a universal basic income. We will bring in subsidized healthcare. We will bring in free education, and nothing is free. Someone has to pay for it at the end. And maybe I think you will learn that when you've got the cancellation of debts by Biden, someone has to pay for those billions in the end, and it ends up being the taxpayer.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those absurd lies that they've told for so long that people believe, which, I mean, one is that the government is your friend. I mean, that's insane to believe these days as well. But it's that something's free, that you can get a free lunch, that anything the government provides is free. I mean, everything the government has must be stolen from the taxpayer first. And the idea that, you know, but you know, this is the thing too. The Democrat preys on the greatest vices of mankind. So obscene selfishness, for example. So the college student will say, yeah, make that person. The rich don't pay their fair share is perfect. I mean, this sums up the insipid nature of the Democrat Party and leftism and socialism also. It is always to foment division in society. And I ask people, okay, the rich don't pay their fair share. Now, firstly, that's fundamentally not true. The rich pay far more than their fair share, an obscene amount of money. Yeah. And many people pay no taxes at all, of course. But even that aside, the idea that any American citizen whining about, you know, some millionaire or billionaire having more money than they do, the idea that taking money from them, the government taking money from them, is going to somehow make you rich is absolutely stupid. No American citizen, no citizen on the planet has ever gotten rich because the government took more money from the rich. It doesn't work that way. And obviously the government cannot create wealth. They cannot create anything. Now, there's certain things, but you have to have a reasonable mind to make the exceptions. You know, when it came to World War II, and it becomes vital, for example, that you defeat the axis of evil, if you will. Okay, industry gets basically usurped to some extent, and it's all focused on winning a war. I mean, that's about survival in some way. So, you know, but this is the problem. We live in an age of unreason. We live in an age where people cannot think for themselves. They can't carve out exceptions. They can't comprehend any kind of complex or even simple problems that they may face and overcome. It's really, I mean, you know, that's why I have a chapter in there called The American Dark Age. And that's where I would point out that if you look at any facet of society right now, is there anything that hasn't been corrupted by the left, by the socialists, by the Marxists? There's not. Culturally, economically, everything is in decline. And that is because of a very sick, perverse ideology that is not new. It's not progressive. It has been around since the beginning of time, okay? Since kings and emperors and everything else. And that's what we're fighting against now. But we have a situation where in the West, in many ways, we've had it so good for so long, we've become soft. And obviously, we don't understand ourselves how bad it's going to be because, you know, we're not like the Patriots of 1776 that actually endured something. And by the way, I would argue that what we're experiencing right now, King George III, Peter, was a much more benevolent monarch than the Democrat Party and Joe Biden. I would take King George III. He taxed us less. He was nicer than these criminals that are running the country today.
I love that you guys complained about your tax on tea, your 2% tax, and now you get Biden. So no other comment to that. But you talk about the look at the American Dark Age. And I mean, the American dream is known all over the world. And I talked to Xi Van Fleet the other day, and she talked about moving from America or from China to America. And that was a dream. Everyone wanted the American dream, the ability to work hard and achieve what is impossible in many other countries in the world. And yet it's turned around from the American dream to the American dream is now you sit on your backside and actually you're just thrown incentives or money by the government. And it's sad looking as a foreigner thinking, actually, the American dream is one thing, the ability to achieve and accomplish, and that's now been turned on its head.
Yeah. Look, the American dream doesn't exist anymore. And I'll tell you why. It's not because it never existed. It's because the left in this country has been attacking and trying to prevent the American dream from being possible anymore. The American dream is very simple. It's not just an American dream. I think it's a human dream that you can, through self-determination and with your own work ethic and intellect and abilities, you can make a better life for yourself. That is it. That is the dream, that there is not somebody out there allowed to impede in some obscene way your ability to improve your own life. That if you want to improve it, you can improve it. It's not the guarantee that everyone's going to be rich. But you can be better off. You can improve your circumstances. That's it. And so in America, was it having the home in the suburbs and the picket fence? At one point, that was it. That's fine. That represented something. And it is Democrat policies. It is left-wing policies that are preventing that and making that out of reach. It's nothing wrong with America. It's nothing wrong with capitalism. The problem is the politicians. It is their policies that have made homeownership unaffordable. That dream is gone for so many Americans that are my age and younger. They can't afford a home. They can barely pay their rent. They can't even buy groceries anymore. And the left, of course, this is, after you read my book, read a book called Rules for Radicals, not you, Peter, but you know, the audience, like read Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. I read it once a year because I want to know every year and make sure it's in my brain what these Democrats are doing, because it's not secretive what they're doing. They talk about it. They've written about it. And what they do with destroying the American dream, for example, is, according to Saul Alinsky, you create a problem. You create the problem, okay? And then you have a piece of legislation. You have a so-called solution prepared, and you present yourself as the sole person who is uniquely qualified to solve that problem that you created. Of course, you're not ever solving the problem. It's just a way to leapfrog into additional tyranny to get what you want. So, you know, for example, you know, they will create tax policies where they make it, look, when you tax the rich, for example, and corporations or raise corporate taxes, at the end of the day, the consumer and the employee are the ones who suffer. So their taxation policies claiming to the rich don't pay their fair share, that actually creates less employment, less opportunity, lower paychecks, and it actually ends up benefiting the rich in the end. And then they'll come along after they've done that and they'll say, again, the rich don't pay their fair share. We need to do this. So they're creating situations in America and then they're blaming Republicans for it. Look at California where I live. You can't blame a Republican for anything. Who do you blame? But they won't blame Democrats because people in the state belong to a cult.
Well, I twice in LA 2022, and I'll probably never return to LA after seeing what the Democrats, I wish I was there when Reagan was actually the governor, and it would have been actually a beautiful state. But at chapter 16, what are you voting for? And you start by saying perhaps no singular human being in U.S. history has been subjected to greater and more relentless political persecution than President Trump. Certainly no U.S. president has been unfairly treated by the media, the Democrat Party, and even establishment Republicans, nor has any president been the subject of greater unwarranted hatred than President Trump. Now, in the UK, we may laugh at Trump derangement syndrome, but you have to live through it and you have to actually engage with people who have this absolute hatred of someone who is so successful in business and has walked away from that and given up a lot, actually enter politics. And people don't necessarily get that. But who you've voted for, tell us about that, because this hatred doesn't really stem from anything. It simply stems from the media pushing a narrative that tells you you must hate this individual because he's been successful and because he's not Obama or he's not Biden.
Yeah. This point in this chapter ties into an earlier one in which I say, you know, if you don't know whether to vote for Trump or Biden, then you ain't American. And of course, I'm making fun of I'm serious, actually, but I'm also making fun of Biden, who said, you know, you ain't black if you don't know whether to vote for me or Trump. Again, racist, right? Most of what has been said about Trump is not even true. And that which may have a kernel of truth, if it's bad, pales in comparison to what Joe Biden or any other Democrat are actually guilty of themselves. And so obviously I go and dispel some of those things and help people understand that you have a propagandist media that will just invent lies about Trump in an effort to, because at the end of the day, all Democrats are running on is the fact that they want to present to the American people and others around the world that Joe Biden's a nicer guy than Trump. That's what it comes down to. In the case that's happening right now, this criminal trial in New York, which is a disgrace, about so-called hush money, there's no crime there. And I get into it in the book, and I explain all of that very specifically and how absurd this is. But the point is, there's a trial going on and no crime was committed. So this jury is being asked what? They're being asked to vote on whether or not they like Trump or not. That's what it comes down to. That's what all of this is about. And they're hoping that they can convince the American voter, for example, that Trump is just a monster and there's you just can't possibly vote for him. They did this in 2020 as well. They've done it before. And it's fundamentally not true. I mean, I got to tell you, I have so much respect. I don't understand a person, even if you dislike something else about Trump, I don't understand how you can't have respect for Trump for what he has suffered for the American people. This is a man who has it all. He doesn't have to do this. And I guarantee you, by the way, if he would just bow out like Nixon did, it would all go away. Or at one point, it would have gone away. Maybe they've gone, across the Rubicon now in terms of their brains. I think they probably have. But they just can't believe that they can't defeat this man and that the American people won't abandon him. And this is somebody, I mean, I ask people to, you know, try and imagine for a moment, just being in Trump's situation, in one of these situations for a day. He's got multiple lawsuits against him. They're trying to bankrupt him and his family. Imagine the pressure you would feel. I wouldn't be on your show, Peter. I wouldn't be doing PR. I'd be curled up in a ball somewhere crying because the weight of the world would be crushing me. I wouldn't know what to do. I'd be concerned about my future and my family, and most people cave. This is a remarkable human being who was built for this moment. I am not saying he's Jesus Christ, by the way, because no man is Jesus Christ. But he is the right man at the right time in American history, and we are so lucky to have someone that is willing to stand there amidst all these slings and arrows coming at him. And the problem in America, it's not Trump. It's a bunch of weak-kneed Republicans and cowards who won't take any slings and arrows for the man who will go to prison for them.
Yeah, but now the awesome privilege of, well, seeing him speak twice this year up in Pennsylvania and South Carolina and actually meeting him. And someone who has the energy, who can talk for an hour and a half, Biden can do maybe 5 minutes and still he's reading the teleprompter, exactly what it says. Completely different individuals. And that energy that Trump has is infectious, exciting, and something I haven't seen in politics, certainly in the UK. Let me just finish off with this on patriotism. Your last two chapters touching on that. And chapter 17, the criminalization of patriotism. And this is something that you're seeing in the US, we are seeing in Europe. I mean, the EU are trying to criminalize any pride of nation states. You give the story of a 12-year-old boy in Colorado kicked out of class for having a Gadsden flag patch on his backpack. And of course, that is the picture, the "Don't Tread on Me, That Snake," you've got on the front page of your book. But it is that, and that, of course, has history back in the War of Independence, and you go through that in the chapter. But it's kind of, where does patriotism lie? Because under President Trump, it was America first, which should be what every leader of every country is about, putting their country first. And Biden seems to be about America last. Let's do everyone else, and America comes last. American jobs, American benefits, you're at the end of the queue after we get through everyone else. Just let's face out that criminalization of patriotism, that the courts going after individuals, the education system, the media. If you love your country, you are the enemy. That's seemingly what everyone in the media is summing up patriotism.
Yeah, look, patriotism is so dangerous to tyrants. I'll give you an example that the Biden administration, a couple of years ago, the National Archives slapped a warning label, dangerous content label, on our founding documents, on the Declaration of Independence. Okay? Look, tyrants have to, just like religion, they have to destroy patriotism. You cannot permit a citizenry to feel patriotic, because patriotism is one of the greatest bulwarks we have to tyranny taking over a country. If you love your country and you feel unity, right? It's the antithesis of victimhood. Democrats want to divide and conquer. What does patriotism do? It unites a citizenry. It gives them a reason to love their country and love themselves and love one another and bring them together. And that is problematic for people that want to rule over you. Okay? Not just because you have numbers and that you're united in that sense, but there are a million different reasons. And so this is why for a long time, the left has decades, before I was even born, they've been doing this, trying to make people feel guilty to be American. That's why the Democrat Party, for example, drudges up the history of slavery. They want you to feel rotten about your country, because you can't convince a population to destroy itself and give tyrants permission to rebuild if they believe that their country is great, if they believe their country is good and decent and moral. And so that's what we have going on here. And I am urging people that if you get anything from the book, you know, lean on the memory of what previous Americans have done for us, the sacrifice, whether it was the founding fathers and the American, the revolutionaries, whether it was Abraham Lincoln in 1861. I mean, this is a moment that is as significant to our history and world history as 1776 and 1861. That is not hyperbole. That is the truth that I need people to understand. And I want them desperately to understand, but I don't want them to be negative about it. I want them to feel a sense of joy, because our ancestors have overcome these obstacles. And I want people to be thanking God that, hey, I am alive right now to meet this moment in history, because all we have is ourselves, and we are enough. You are enough, whether you're in London or New York City or Chicago or Dallas or some rural place in the UK or America, you have the capacity to save and reverse course, to reclaim your destiny, which is a shared destiny of humanity, to live a life of freedom, free of oppression by your government, these elites that are the most inferior among us who are ruling over us. And so at the end of the day, my message is one of optimism, because I believe in us. I believe in you. I believe in myself. But we have to understand history. We have to be devoted, because this is never going to go away. As long as mankind walks this earth, there will be tyrants, the Caesars and Napoleons and so on and so forth, the, you know, Sadiq Khans and the Joe Bidens that are going to try and steal your liberty. So, you know, this is something that's lifelong, and we just have to, we have to change our outlook and be a little bit more active. We can't just leave it to the government to take care of us, because they're a necessary evil, not a necessary good.
True. Thank you so much for your time. I've thoroughly enjoyed the book, America's Last Stand, and it does give that overview of the issues which you're facing, but you can transcribe that over to the UK or Europe, and it's the same battles against common sense and freedom that we are also facing. So thank you so much for joining us today. And of course, the book is available as paperback, audiobook, Kindle, however you want to get it. It's available on all those formats. So thanks for your time today, Drew.
Thanks, Peter.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsofoak.org. Thank you for listening.